Welcome to a Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Scott Burton. It's Friday, August 24th, 2018. On today's show, we'll meet members of the Juno band Jizzle Fizzle. We'll get the details on special UAS classes on World War II in Europe. We'll get invited to a food festival at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Learn how to participate in Park and Rec's Day of Play on Saturday. And we'll get a preview of a free Monday forum on ballot measure 1, dealing with fish habitat, permitting, and development. Those interviews, national native news, bird note music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 54 with light, rain, and mist here in the capital city.
This is national native news. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara Nation in North Dakota is suing the federal government to protect a lake from development. Chairman Mark Fox told the Bismarck Tribune the tribe has exhausted appeals to the government, which approve oil wells closer to the lake than allowed by tribal regulations. The developers say the wells are on private land. The tribe's concerned about drinking water and cultural resources. The Standing Rock Sioux Tribe celebrated the homecoming of professional basketball player Kyrie Irving and his sister Asia to the Native Nation. The descendants of the tribe were honored Thursday in North Dakota with a naming ceremony, dances, and a community feed. In this clip by ESPN, Irving expressed to the crowd how special it was for him to be there and to acknowledge his Native heritage.
The support has been there, even without necessarily knowing each other, shows how special and what it means to be a native of this country and be a Native American. And for me, I had no idea. I had no idea about the history. I had no idea how inclusive this group is and what it means to be part of Standing Rock and be part of the United Sioux Nation. So I want to thank all you guys for hosting myself, my sister, my best friend Brett Carroll, my grandparents, and the fact that I get to meet my family finally. I mean, you guys have no idea. This is finally meeting my mom's family, and now I'm with you guys forever, and I hope that you don't mind that, because I don't mind it either. So,
Irving's late mother was adopted out of the tribe as a child. The tribe traced her roots to the White Mountain family of Standing Rock. The Boston Celtics star received the name Little Mountain and his sister Buffalo Woman. The Lakota names come from their ancestors. A Southeast Alaska Cultural Center will study a Tlingit bentwood box drum that's more than 130 years old. By scanning the box, century-old details are returning to the surface. KTOO's Trip Krause talked with Sea Alaska Heritage Institute about the process.
Sea Alaska Heritage is studying the carvings and paintings on the wooden Tlingit drum, which is on loan from the Huna-based Tok'Dantan clan. Chuck Smythe is the director for the Cultural and History Department at Sea Alaska Heritage.
It's a bentwood box with the back side is open and the front side has a carved piece attached to it that looks to be a bear and some other designs on it that are carved into it.
Many details have been lost to age, so Sea Alaska Heritage enlisted infrared scanning to help bring them back.
And the idea of infrared photography is to bring out what's not visible on the surface and what's not visible here through the dark surface of this drum and see what the painting might be.
Smythe says the full-size box drum this far north and southeast is unusual.
Well, the paintings were just very unusual. They're not sort of standard form line. We could see some salmon on one side and other side we knew there were some sort of figures there, but we couldn't really tell what they were before that photography. It's kind of a voice from the past, and that's what's so exciting about it.
Smythe says he hopes the drum designs inspire present-day artists to create new formline designs. In Juno, I'm Trip J. Krause.
More than $600,000 has been awarded to Navajo Technical University from the National Science Foundation. The funds will go to improve broadband. Officials say the college's internet issues have long impacted teaching and distant and online learning. The grant will help improve network speeds and bandwidth. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is by Odawi Law Group, provider of Indian Law Solutions, and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite System.
Support by the American Indian Tourism Conference, providing technical resources and education to advance and develop tourism programs in Indian Country. Registration available at AITC2018.com or at the conference. Support by Freedom Lodge, presenting Body and Earth, the future of Native wellness, exploring cultural concerns, health disparities, and historical trauma. Honest discussion for idea sharing, cultural liberation, and personal change at bodyandearth.org. Registration through September 12th at bodyandearth.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Tuned in to a Juno afternoon here on Friday, August 24th. Scott Burton, your host today. That's the voice of Rob Montoya. He's the front person for the band Jizzle Fizzle, and he's in the studio. And so is Kyle Harris. Rob, Kyle, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey,
hello.
Hello, thank you for having us.
So that song speaks for itself. Jesus Was a Surfer. Does this exemplify your guys' sound?
Yeah, I think so. It is that kind of, we try to get into the groovy, and then we try to get into the funky, kind of Mississippi stompy type of stuff with lots of distortion, kind of like maybe Black Keys or the Mississippi All-Stars or something, but this is definitely an aspect of our sound for sure. It's that nice kind of laid-back groove that you just heard. Jesus Was a Surfer.
Okay, and you guys are playing tomorrow, Saturday night, at the Alaskan Barn Hotel in downtown Juneau, Alaska.
Yes, the famous.
Kyle, what would you add to his description of your sound? You play bass, right?
I do. I've been known to play bass, a little bit of guitar as well. Me and one of the other band members kind of switch back and forth. We switch bass duties, guitar duties, keep it interesting.
Cool. You know. And the sound, what would you say? Would you add to that?
Well, I think Rob did a pretty good job of throwing out some good adjectives to describe the sound, but yeah, I mean, yeah, we're basically kind of a jam band, you know. We have a general idea of you know, where we're going to go with these songs, but sometimes they can take some surprising turns. You know?
When did you guys get together?
Oh, geez, been a while now. Kyle, but Kyle and I have been playing music on and off since probably around 2004 or 2005, and then with this particular ensemble, probably in the last three and a half years, and then with Rylan and me and Kyle, it's probably been at least 4 years. We did a lot of blues-oriented type of music and Grateful Dead, and in that jammy vein. And then I think we made kind of this interesting switch when. You know, people leave in bands and they come and go, and we just was kind of the three of us, and we started to just generate these more really simple chord progressions, maybe two chords or three chords, kind of embraced the more punk spirit of music, and also kind of the developing the songs in kind of a workshop where we just have a riff and we just jam on it and then come up with some lyrics and kind of find stuff that fits, and then those kind of become the lyrics or the hook for it. And I think they've been really honest lyrics. They're more fun than we've, you know, they're super honest, and I've had better audience response to our shows than I had when we were just more kind of a bluesy kind of dead thing.
And you're kind of ad-libbing quite a bit, aren't you?
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's mostly ad-lib. Mostly we have the hooks are well-developed, like Jesus Was a Surfer, but then the storyline behind that one's really easy because I use in my lyrical content as a lot of cultural artifacts, so Juno is a particular of interest in singing about and the aspects of their So, of course, he's a surfer, surfing through Juneau streets and Front Street and down Franklin, too, grinding on the sidewalks and the avenues and stuff. And so that's kind of that. And then also pulling in just the stuff that's happening, I think, and generally around me, like culturally happening. So, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You've mentioned a few names already. Kyle, tell us who else is in the band.
Okay. So we've got Rob. He's the front man, lead singer, rhythm guitarist. Rylan Buller, the very talented Rylan Buller. And he's the one sharing the lead guitar and bass duties. We also have Mr. Ryan Cortez, drummer extraordinaire, as well as John Wall on the hand drums. And we have other people kind of in our orbit that might occasionally, you know, sit in.
Okay.
Yeah. Sometimes Luke Wild comes in and plays some keyboards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
some
he adds a nice
talented
texture.
Musicians there.
Yeah.
You have another song ready for us.
Yeah,
Rob.
I do. Yeah. I do.
What should we listen for in this one?
This is a song just that's about missing your partner, your girlfriend, your man, and it's about the imageries, I guess, of that walk along the street and thinking about those things.
Right. I'll relate to that stuff.
We going with it? Okay.
So that's you, Kyle, playing that bass line?
You got it.
Nice.
Rylan Buller on guitar.
Sounding good. And you singing there, Rob.
Yeah.
That one's called what again?
That is So Long is what that one's called. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. A song of, longing and missing and love. So that's like kind of some of the themes of some of our songs, I think, are just that human experience that people can relate to. We had, Keith, who does a lot of sound, and we do a
Keith
show.
Keith Giles of Alaska Music One.
Yeah, yep. And he does the sound. He's been doing our sound at the Flight Deck when we play there. We're going to play there, not this Friday, but next Friday.
31st.
And he really enjoyed it, and because we have some other songs that are a little risque, but you know they have this universal theme that you can relate to, and so he said that was some of the comments. I was like, oh wow, I've never heard that one before. So you know, I don't know, maybe there's something to original lyrics. I think there's more honesty, and you're like a lot more connected to the original lyrics than,
you know, we try to keep it fun, upbeat. You know, we're not too serious. You know, we're there to have a good time, and we hope that you know people are going to get out and dance and get into the groove. You know?
Yeah, I'm certainly. If I am serious, someone needs to kick me, right? Because this isn't serious. It's just we're having a good time and hope that people will have a good time. And, you know, if nobody shows up, you know what I mean? You just keep playing for the napkins.
You're just having a practice on stage.
Yeah,
right there.
Yeah.
Serious fun.
So thinking about playing in napkins and bars and hotels, what can we expect on Saturday night?
Oh, well.
At the Alaskan.
Let me see. We're going to be running through our set list. So we'll have some grooves. We'll probably stretch out in a few tunes. You know, if you're a fan of guitar solos, that kind of stuff, definitely come in and check it out. You know, a good place to be on a rainy evening in Juneau.
Do people like to dance to your guys' music?
Well, we'd like to think they do. Yeah, we've got some solid grooves. You know, I was kind of thinking earlier, you know, part of our philosophy or strategy is, you know, the simpler, the better. You know, the less parts you have, the less you have to remember. And we fall back on just having a real solid groove. You know, we've got a pretty tight rhythm section, if I do say so myself. So
between you and Cortez.
Yes.
Ryan Cortez.
Yeah, it's
yes.
pretty. It's
and
pretty
then,
dreamy. And Ryland too. Yeah. I mean, they really lay down some nice grooves. And we have people dancing. I think, you know, it's like a lot of things. It just depends on the evening. Because I mean, there was one night where literally I thought I could crowd surf. There were so many people, and they were like, it was just unbelievable. And then there was another night where it was just fairly, you know, just kind of not really filled, but people had danced to a few songs, and. And I think we had another night, you know, people were, like, hugging me. And they're like, that was the best thing ever. And I was like, are you on drugs, man? Cause, like, yeah, I am. And it was still awesome. So, but, you know, it just varies. And I think we have a few particularly, like, we've got these kind of punky-driven anthems that people like to just kind of shake about on. And then sometimes people will try to swing to stuff because it's got a swing, maybe feel kind of thing. Because we have some songs that kind of has where we do maybe a 4/4 time, and then we make kind of switch it up for a 3/4 time at the end on one song that we've been kind of working around with.
Our sound's kind of all over the map. I mean, we've got some stuff that's, you know, on the funkier side of things, definitely more, you know, straight up rock and roll, but then also some of those, you know, harder hitting, faster punk songs. So.
Right.
Kind of eclectic.
What
mix.
Time do you guys start up on Saturday?
10 o'clock.
At the Alaskan, downtown. South Seward Street? There's a front? It's front.
Front Street.
Franklin. South Franklin.
Just wander around long enough until you hear some music. You know?
Yeah.
You can find it.
All right. So I know you got another song here for us, but before we get to that, to take us out, where can we find you guys on social media or the web?
Oh, we're on Facebook. Find us on Jizzle Fizzle. And we got a Facebook page there. Give us a like. We have, I think we have some links to SoundCloud for some stuff that we had, and you can definitely put other stuff up there. And usually we'll post a poster there or what we're doing. So.
All right. Otherwise, you can see him this Saturday night at the Alaskan Bar and Hotel starting at 10 p.m. there on South Franklin Street in downtown Juneau, Alaska. What's this last tune we're going to go out on?
This one is just a little thing that I think shows the full potential of Jizzle Fizzle. And it's like most creative song called Juno. And this is just a little demo.
It's kind of still in development.
Yeah, still in development. We'll see where this one goes. But this is, you know, something that we do.
Yeah, referencing the local.
All right. Thank you.
Cod are at their lowest numbers on record in the Gulf of Alaska. It's been devastating for fishermen and the town of Kodiak.
When you see like an 80% decline in cod, what you see is that piece pulled out of the economic wheel of the community.
On the next episode of The Big Thaw, how the blob led to the near collapse of the cod population in the Gulf of Alaska. Available Thursday at KTOO.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Support comes from Dockside Wrangell, a floathouse vacation rental in Wrangell. This private floathouse is around the bay from the middle of town. Accommodation for one person or a couple. Dockside is a self-contained home for short-term stays. Information at DocksideWrangell.com.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on August 24th. It's about 20 minutes past the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and with me now in the studio is Dr. Michael Collins. He is going to be teaching two classes at the University of Alaska Southeast this semester. He's a guest all the way up from UC Davis, and he's going to be teaching a class on World War II and Europe, 1939 and beyond. Dr. Collins, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here.
Thanks.
Tell us how this exchange came to be and how you landed in Juneau here.
Well, there are two faculty members on sabbatical at the moment, off for the year. So they've asked me to fill in for them for history and for political science.
Okay. And these two classes, tell us a little bit about those and how they relate to your background.
Well, I'm an expert in warfare, history of warfare, and military history, and the history of technology. So I was asked to do these specialized courses, sort of a one-off. It's a unique opportunity. Face-to-face in person in Juneau.
Got it. And tell us the exact titles of the classes, if you will.
The history course is History 293, the Second World War. And the other course is Political Science 293, Europe Since 1939.
All right. So you're an expert in warfare history and the other two fields?
Technology.
Okay.
Yeah, and culture.
All right. Warfare history. Thinking about that class on World War II, this may be a weird question to put it this way, but what do you like teaching most about that war?
The personal experiences of the soldiers and the survivors, because it relates so closely to people's feelings about their own family heritage and about national identity.
Wow. So do you actually identify with certain soldiers and teach your students about them?
Or often we do, because I get a lot of veterans in my courses and a lot of non-traditional students. So people come in and they have family members who served, and there's a lot of strong feeling about that.
So give us an example maybe of a character that comes to mind.
Well, Eugene Sledge is a very famous memoir. Writes it during the Second World War, and he fought in the South Pacific and Guadalcanal and various other places, in Peleliu and Okinawa. And his memoir is a very personal account, a day-to-day kind of thing, what it was like to be a soldier on the front, what it was like to serve and fight on those beaches. And so it's a very emotional account, very impactful one. And students can identify with this young type of person that's out there taking risks, gaining experience, and there's often an interesting kind of identification that takes place.
Interesting. Yeah. So they get to know Eugene Sledge, and you guys read his memoir?
Yes.
In the class, that's part of the reading. I want to get back to that, but let's talk about nuts and bolts really quick.
Mm-hmm.
These classes start at UAS next week, right?
That's right, yeah.
And when are your two classes offered?
They're on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The World War II class is offered at 1:15 in the afternoon, and the European course is offered at 9:30 in the morning, I believe.
So these sound really interesting. Is this the kind of thing, traditional, non-traditional? What kind of students would benefit from taking these?
People from all backgrounds, not just traditional students. I enjoy having non-traditional students in my classroom, which are outside of the typical 18 to 22-year-olds. So community members are especially welcome.
So I'm not exactly sure how prereqs work for these numbers, but could just about any one of our listeners right now sign up for either of these classes?
Exactly, yes. At their open enrollment, there are no prereqs.
Okay. What does one of your classes look like? How do you interact with students? What do you like about teaching?
I get to know them personally, often one by one, and they're small class sizes, frequent discussions, and I assist them with developing their skills, the writing skills, argumentation, critical thinking.
Okay. Thinking about so the class on World War II, you get to meet soldiers like Eugene Sledge. Then going into Europe, 1939 and beyond, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's about when World War II technically started?
Yes.
Yeah. A lot of changes in Europe.
Yes.
What do you like to teach about that?
The origins of the Cold War, and as well as the origins of the European Union taking place, as well as links to more current events, you know, Russian interventionism and Brexit, and issues that are more controversial in the modern day.
So, yeah, you tie them in.
Yes, we do.
Absolutely. And I guess I was going to ask you just sort of about some of the takeaways looking back at World War II. I guess possible parallels to now, and what are when your students leave the class, what are they taking away with them?
That there are potential dangers to ideas like nationalism, but there are also ideas to fight for. You know, there's an ethical imperative to fight for. So we see a lot of that, but also the fact that the war is not just, you know, the history of the war is not just about soldiers in the field, but about civilians and their victimization as well. So these are important things to take away.
Okay. I suspect any students out there listening right now know exactly how to sign up for these classes. If another listener wants to sign up, what's the best way for them to do that?
Best way, there's a variety of ways. You can email me at mdcollins3@alaska.edu. You can go to US's website, University of Alaska Southeast, their website, and there's admissions there. You can visit the university here in Juneau and walk into admissions straight on the campus. It's very easy to find. So any one of those ways works.
Okay. Let's see. And classes start. Let's see. Today is Friday. So your classes are Tuesday, Thursday, right?
Yes.
And give us the details or the times of those once more, please.
The one that's for the Second World War is in the afternoon, after lunch at 1:15 to 2:45. And the other is in the morning. I believe it's at 9:30, but I have to check the times again. And that's this another hour and a half course.
Have you had a chance to look at the connections of Juneau in World War II and what was going on? Anything there?
Yes. Yeah, actually, there are a variety of Alaskan archives, which actually took me a little by surprise as I was investigating it. The National Park Service and the Downtown State Archives have a variety of items that we'll actually use in the courses write about these soldiers, do a bit of investigation ourselves.
All right. We've been talking with Dr. Michael Collins. He's teaching two classes at the University of Alaska Southeast this semester, a class on World War II and Europe post-1939. They start on Tuesday. It would be nice to be there for the first day of class.
Yes. There's enrollment open the first 2 weeks, though. So, you know, anytime during the next 2 weeks, a person can enroll.
Okay. Is there anything else that you'd like to add? Anything we're missing?
This is one of my first visits to Juneau. I think it's a beautiful city. I love it here. I love the outdoors here. So it's really exciting for me to be here. I'm looking forward to teaching these courses.
Well, it's nice to have you here.
Yeah, thank you.
Come, you masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs. You that hide behind walls. You that hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes. And you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. Like Judas of old, you lie and deceive. A world war can be won. You want me to believe, but I see through your eyes, and I see through your brain, like I see through the water that runs down my drain.
He fastened all the triggers for the others to fire. And then you sit back and watch when the death count gets higher. You hide in your mansion while the young people's blood flows out of their bodies and is buried in the mud. You've thrown the worst fear that can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world for threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood that runs in your veins. How much do I know? But to talk out of turn, you might say that I'm young. You might say I'm unlearned. But there's the one thing I know. I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul. And I hope that you die, and your death will come soon. I follow your casket by the pale afternoon, and I watch while you're lowered down to your deathbed. And I stand over your grave till I'm sure that you're dead.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on August 24th, 2018. It's Friday, and it's about 27 minutes till the top of the hour. My guest now is Rachel Utzler.
Yay.
She's the facility manager over at the Juno Arts and Culture Center and also the president of Douglas Community Gardens. And we're going to be talking about the food festival.
Yes.
Tomorrow, 9
tomorrow,
to 1.
Tomorrow, 9 to 1.
At the Juno Arts and Culture Center.
Yes, completely. And you want to get there early. Vegetables sell out.
So
I have noticed that.
It's a food festival. Is it like a farmer's market?
It's a food festival, farmer's market, really focusing on sustainability.
Okay. And so I think a lot of us know of you there at the Jack. We work with you often in arts events and
all
other kinds of
stuff.
Coolness. Tell us about your community gardens in Douglas and how what you do with them.
Well, with our Douglas Community Gardens, I'm just a terrible president. We just kind of rope it together. We have found that gardening is a very solitary activity, so we don't do a lot of big group activities whatsoever. But we do operate two different gardens, one on the Crow Hill and one at the Rohrbrockers in their front yard. Basically, we're the only community gardens that are on private property.
Weren't you one of the originators? Didn't you help build that? No.
Well, kind of. Yes, I guess. I guess I was there near the beginning.
I thought I saw you helping build that one down there.
Yeah, I guess I kind of did that. I try not to build everything.
Okay, so we have the garden down there by the Douglas Post Office in the Montessori. About how many plots do you have there?
Oh, good God, you're putting me on the spot. I think we have about over 20 plots at the Crow Hill. We actually have about almost 30 plots. And at the Douglas one right across from Fish and Game, we have probably about 20, 25 plots.
Okay, and some of those are probably families, some are
individuals, all kinds of different groups. I have my little plot there, which I grow arugula seeds.
Nice. Just go for the seeds.
I just go for the seeds.
You're a seed farmer.
But that is what the Douglas Community Gardens. I also, one of my many other little things that I do is I'm an Ed Hume seed distributor also. So after the leftover seeds, we actually do go ahead and give them away. We can't sell them at all, but we do have them for donation at our Douglas Community booths just to help everyone grow all kinds of stuff. Because there's a lot of stuff growing in this town right now.
Yeah, sunny summer. What were some highlights in the garden that you saw?
Garden-wise, I wasn't at the garden at all.
You were working.
Yes, I was pretty much working a lot. The garden didn't do super well this year. I know even my currants in my front yard were kind of a little hit and miss. I got three small flushes off of them.
Was it too sunny?
It wasn't too sunny. I think it was really, what happened is it was really rainy right when they were coming through. My raspberries in my garden also got hit by porcupines, so that didn't help. But I have noticed there is gardeners over there that do have berries, and lots of different gardeners. So not only Douglas Community Gardens is featured over here, but we have all kinds of gardeners. Yeah. And I've also noticed like kelp and seaweed, huge one. And that's been really, there's a whole bunch of different groups that are growing.
Yeah, you said maybe 30 vendors tomorrow?
Yeah, over 30. Most definitely. We actually were sold out inside. I've got two out in the front. I put another person right in the corner so I can fit everyone in. At our workshops, we have workshops in the gallery, and because we filled up all those time slots, we actually now have workshops that will be happening at the booths also.
Wow. What's an example of one of the workshops?
Well, we have – do you want to go through the whole list?
Yeah.
We've got a crazy list. Let's go start with the workshops. The workshops, they will be in the gallery will be on the quarter of the hour. And those will be, we're going to start out with Juno Compost. And that's Lisa Doherty. She's going to be doing Growing a Compost Movement.
And just to double check, that's starting tomorrow morning, Saturday at 9 a.m.
At
the Juno Arts and Culture Center.
Okay. Yes.
Juno Compost.
And now we're getting workshops. We'll start on the quarter hour. So hers will be at 9:15, and she's going to be providing a brief overview of why composting is important, highlight compost initiatives across the country, and help set the framework for a compost vision for Juno. I know she's going to have their big pad of paper out there, and she wants all the community input that she can.
I heard she's already starting to deliver compost.
Has she been?
Yeah.
We've been giving her compost, waste. Yep.
Yeah.
We are doing great. I love that word. Composting everywhere in town. So we can come listen, share ideas, and brainstorm, and become part of the movement. That will be at 9:15. And then we're going to go directly in at 10:15. These will be 45-minute workshops in the gallery, so they're a little more extensive. At 10:15, we have Dave Gregovich, who's going to be talking about mushrooms, and he'll probably just be doing a little bit of example of how to prep mushrooms, what you're actually going out and looking for, different types of things. At 11:15, we've got Cycle Alaska coming in. So now we're going a little bit more towards the sustainability movement, and they're going to do how to care for your bike and do like tune-ups and things like that, which is fantastic. And then at 12:15, we've got Panhandle Produce. Farmer Eli will be there, and he'll be talking about his hydroponic growing that they do. They do a lot of their microgreens and different things. And I've checked out Panhandle Produce, which now has a storefront right over next to Costco. And they've been doing all that tiered gardening and doing a bunch of stuff. So he will be talking about that one. Indoor vertical hydroponics is how they've been doing theirs, which will be pretty interesting. And then, because we ran out of time and space in the gallery, we're having Corrine Conlin. She has now just published her foraging book, so she'll have those available. And she will be doing a couple different talks. One, and they'll just be short mini workshops. At 9:30, she'll be doing improving tomato yields. At 10:30, she'll be doing a fall foraging talk. At 11:30, she will be redoing the fall foraging talk. And then we also have Sarah Lewis, who's UAF Cooperative Extension Service. And she also is going to be running mini workshops out of her booth in the corner. And at 10 o'clock, she will be doing canning 101. At 11, she will be using how to use a pressure canner. And at 12, she's going to make sauerkraut, which
very
I just
cool.
started doing, too, which is super exciting and really easy.
Rachel, I wish we had more time to keep talking about all of these opportunities tomorrow. Let's end on this. You already talked about kelp, berries,
berries. We've
what
got
else might
all kinds
people
of
be
potatoes,
able to?
Potatoes, garlic. We've got fungi from Haynes. We've got all kinds of organic producers, panhandles. We've got pickles. We've got different types of foods. And we will have big maps right on all the doors that will just direct you to all of the different booths and what they have there. And
is
we
there
will
a cost
also
to get in?
No, this is free. All free. This is a free
Juno thing. I feel
like there's this
underlying theme of sustainability under all of this.
Most definitely.
9
yes.
to 1 tomorrow, ladies and gentlemen,
and
a Farmers Market Food Festival. What's it technically called?
It technically is the 11th Annual Food Fest. But it just it goes all over the place.
9 to 1 at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. What's your guys' address over there?
What is it? 350 Whittier.
350 Whittier.
Yes.
Cool. We're 360 Egan.
And you're 360. We're right in between Centennial
yep.
and K2. You can't miss it.
9 to 1 Saturday.
Plus, there'll be tents in the front yard.
All right.
Oh, yes.
Rachel Utzler, see her tomorrow at the festival, 9 to 1 at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. Rachel, thanks for coming
of
on the show.
Of course. Thank you.
Farmer, he's lost all his corn. And now where's the money to pay off his loan? He lost all his corn, can't pay off his loan. He lost all his corn. Well, the poor old dirt farmer, he only grows stone.
Listening to a Juno afternoon here on Friday. It's about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. In the studio with me now is Amanda Lovejoy. She's the recreation coordinator over at CBJ Parks and Recreation, and Lauren Borelli. She's an administrative assistant. We're here to talk about tomorrow's day of play. Welcome to the show, Amanda and Lauren.
Thank you.
Nice to have you both here. So CBJ Day of Play, you're saying this is the ninth one?
Correct. Yeah, we've been doing it for a really long time. It's a great community event.
And Amanda, how did it come to be?
My understanding of the history is that it started with the Nickelodeon Day of Play, and we moved away from that to create our own event. It usually, for Nickelodeon, it took place in July, but for us, we wanted to incorporate the ice rink and some of our other facilities that don't have as much to do in the summer, so we moved it to August and September.
All right, and this is your seventh, right?
I believe so.
Lauren, tell me a little bit about what's going on tomorrow. Where can people go to enjoy the CBJ Day of Play?
Well, the event starts out at 10 a.m. at Capitol School Park. We're going to have gaga ball games going. And
What kind of ball?
Gaga ball.
What is gaga ball?
It's like if you
took dodgeball and foursquare and they made a baby, so you're in a pit where you hit a ball at each other's knees, and if it hits you, you're out, but you can punch it back to somebody. You just can't hit them waist up, or you're out.
Okay.
The kids love it.
Gaga ball?
Yeah. Gaga ball. The kids are crazy over it. And we have Breezen donating some donut holes for us, so you can start the morning out there at 10 a.m., and then at Augustus Brown Pool, we have a free swim session at 10:30 till noon. You have to arrive half hour beforehand to receive your wristband for entry. And then over at the Juneau Douglas City Museum at 10:30 as well, we have a free admission to the museum, and there's going to be a scavenger hunt for the kids to go through and find the clues, and then you get a little prize at the end. And then at Zach Gordon Youth Center from 11 a.m. till 1, we're going to have a free hot dog lunch. We'll have the Juno jumpers there. There'll be sidewalk chalk. We'll have the climbing wall open so the kids can see how high they can go up on the wall. And then one of our new events this year is going to be at Cope Park. It's going to be highlighting, all the equipment you can rent through Parks and Rec, like bocce ball and horseshoes and badminton and stuff. And we have the pickleball community that's going to be out there as well, teaching people about pickleball and how to play the sport. And the Valley Dominoes actually donated us some pizza, so we'll have some pizza there. And then Treadwell Arena will have two free skate sessions. The first one's at 12:30, and that goes till 1:10. And then the second one, it starts at 1:30 and goes until 2:10. And again, you have to arrive a half hour before each session to get your wristband for entry.
All right. So these are, for the most part, all CBJ facilities.
Correct.
And how would you say, how would you describe this? It's outreach, a chance for...
It's a way for us to say thank you to the community. It really is, because we receive such amazing support from, our volunteers and parents in the community and kids who come into our facilities. So this is just a way for us to say thank you for being a part of our family.
Okay. Those were a lot of events and times, Lauren. Where can we see those online or digitally?
You can go to juno.org/parksrec, and the schedule is there at the top of our website. It's also on our Facebook page, or any of the pools or the Treadwell or the Parks and Rec Facebook page. Do you want to talk about the end-of-day events?
So towards the end of the day, we have the JDH Bears Crimson Boys basketball team. We'll be at Riverbend Elementary to shoot some hoops with kids.
Oh, fun.
And then there's the trucks and stuff, which is – we have Capital City Fire and Rescue. Streets is bringing a bus, so we'll have a fire truck, a city bus, a loader, a grader, and then there's going to be a party bus. And Glacial Grinds will be there as well to sell shaved ice.
Trucks and stuff.
Yeah,
the kids love it.
It's really loud
lots
of honking. But it's and North Star Trucking will have a helicopter. Yeah,
what?
As well. Yeah, so the kids can get into the helicopter and talk with the pilots, which is amazing.
Where is that one?
It's at the Diamond Park. It's in the parking lot of the Diamond Park Aquatic Center.
And what time does that one start?
That one starts at 2.
Okay.
And it's until 5.
Yeah, and then the Diamond Park Aquatic Center has two free swim sessions. The first one starts at 2 p.m. till 3:30, and the second one at 4 to 5:30.
All right.
And then we end with the Diamond Park Fieldhouse has open turf time.
Until
5.
Okay. This sounds like so much fun. Lauren, remind us one more time where we can see this all.
Juno.org/parksrec.
Okay, or any of the Facebook pages, right?
Yeah, just Google
CBJ
Parks and Rec.
Yeah, sounds like a lot of fun. We've been speaking with Amanda Lovejoy and Lauren Varelli about tomorrow's CBJ Parks and Rec Day of Play. Starts at 10. It sounds like it goes till 5.
Mm-hmm.
More events than we can recap right here, but go check it out at the CBJ Parks and Rec site.
Is there any way we could say thank you to the outside people who are supporting us as well? Juno Jumpers and Valley Dominoes and Breeze Inn and Glacial Grinds are all amazing supporters of this event, so we wanted to say thank you to them as well.
Very cool. Thank you, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Green Sally Hood, a green Sally down. Last gun's got to tell the ground. Green Sally Hood, a green Sally down. Last gun's got to tell the ground. Green Sally Hood, a green Sally down. Last gun's got to tell the ground.
out. Ah, mallards at your local pond. They're our largest dabbling duck, and among ducks, the most abundant species. They're the source of all domestic ducks, except the Muscovy. There's a female making herself heard. But does it seem that all the brightly colored male mallards have disappeared? By now, the male duck's need for fancy feathers to attract the females has passed. The male mallards have molted, dropping their bright green, reddish, black, and white feathers and replacing them with mottled brown ones. Changing into more subdued colors for the months of summer helps camouflage the male ducks, protecting them from predators. Come fall, the mallards will molt again and return to the colorful dandies we remember. In the meantime, while all the mallards look like brownish females, there's one way to distinguish males from females. Look closely at the bill. The male's bill is dull yellow, while the female's is orange marked with black. And watch to see which duck is quacking. That's the female mallard. Male mallards make a more subdued and raspy call, mostly when courting or greeting, or when they feel threatened. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, showcasing a variety of artwork every first Friday at the Downtown Cafe. More information at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on August 24th. It's about 7 minutes till the top of the hour. Joining me in the studio now is Kevin Golofson of the Juno Empire. He's the Natural Resources Outdoors and General Assignment over there. And we also have Jacob Resnick, who is the Coast Alaska Regional News Director here at KTOO Public Media. Welcome to the show, you guys.
Thanks, Scott.
So we're here to talk about ballot measure one, or talk about you guys are going to be moderating a forum on Monday night at 360 here in the KTOO building downstairs at 5 o'clock a few days from now. Kevin, what is ballot measure one?
So ballot measure one, which we'll be voting on November 6th, changes how permitting laws are governed in Alaska for anadromous fish habitat. And
remind us what anadromous fish are.
So it's salmon and a few other species of fish. And anadromous fish live in both freshwater and saltwater environments. It would affect how permitting is done through the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Okay. Why is this a hot spot, Jacob?
Because when you have new regulations, it will say how close you can have a mine or a factory or an oil drill for oil, how close you can do that to a salmon stream, for example, and or any anadromous fish, Dolly Vartans, whatever. So, and as we know, Alaska is dotted with all kinds of streams and rivers, which is a good thing, but it could arguably make more regulatory restrictions for that kind of activity.
Okay, and this is ballot measure one. We'll be voting on November 6th, yes or no for this. You're going to have a forum on Monday night here in the building. Is this going to be televised as well?
It will not live televised. It will be shown on 360 North at a later date.
Okay, and you're going to have people on both sides of the issue as part of your forum. Who have you invited?
Yeah, so speaking against ballot measure one is Mike Satry of Greens Creek Mine, which is a mine on Admiralty Island here in Juneau. And he is the external affairs coordinator, I believe, for Greens Creek. But he's got a background in geology as well. And speaking for the measure is Emily Anderson, who's an attorney by trade. She works with the Wild Salmon Center. Yeah,
they were one of the groups that helped push to gather signatures and get it on the ballot. There were about 42,000 signatures to put this on the ballot, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, which made a few little tweaks, but It's been quite a fight even to get this to voters.
What do you guys foresee as being maybe Mike's number one argument and her number one argument?
Well, I think opponents so far have made the argument that this ballot measure will really grind development to a halt, and that it'll especially hurt rural Alaska. And proponents of the measure so far have made the argument that these are much-needed protections and that responsible development will have a chance to be fast-tracked through how the permitting structure is laid out in the ballot measure.
Right, that the small actors wouldn't be squeezed out. But if there is a large development coming in, you know, it's we should be taking protections of fish streams very seriously because that's what, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, subsistence issues, people who rely on salmon, and then, of course, then the commercial and sport fishing as well. Fishing itself is a major industry in Alaska as well.
All right, we're speaking with Kevin Gulofson and Jacob Resnick about a forum on Monday night here in the KTO building at 360 Egan Drive. The doors open at 5 p.m. and cameras roll at 5:30.
That's right. We're really trying to get as many people as we can. We can hold as many as 80 people in there because we're going to be having Mike Satry from Greens Creek Mine and Emily Anderson for Wild Salmon Center. They're going to make their, you know, short introductions, and then we're going to open it to the questions from the audience. We're hoping to get as much public engagement as possible. So if people have their questions, they should come down and bring it. So we'll be opening at 5 and then getting everyone seated, and then we'll be taping this for television. So that's why we can open the doors and close the doors after 5:30.
And this is a collaboration between the Juneau Empire and us here at KTO Public Media?
And the Juneau Economic Development Council.
Okay.
Yeah, this really is about answering the questions that people have remaining about this ballot measure, because when I'm out and about in the community, people still seem to be uncertain about what effect this will have. And so if people have questions, they should show up prepared to ask them. And also, if you can't make it, please let the Juneau Empire know what your questions are. We're crowdsourcing a few questions as well, so they can email us at editor@juneauempire.com or visit our social media channels that way.
All right. If people want more information, I know there's a blurb at ktoo.org as well,
yep.
Probably at the Juneau Empire as well. Thank you guys both for coming on the show. You can see these guys in action Monday night, Kevin Gulofson and also Jacob Resnick. Doors open at 5. Cameras roll at 5:30. It's probably
right.
About an hour long. Admission is free.
Yep.
Here in the KTOO building, a forum on ballot measure 1. Thanks for coming on the show, guys.
Thanks, Scott.
And thank you for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon.